This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the latest reaction show. Tonight we're doing it for the WWE Payback special on the WWE Network. This is Will. I'm joined tonight by the Titans, Johnny and Pete. We also have Wrestling Culture's Dylan and Exile on Bad Streets' Chris Zellner. And guys, last month Dylan cursed us with his moonlighting. We had some technical difficulties.
I knew I was going to be blamed.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
What's this white man?
Okay, let's rephrase that. Johnny Sorrow had some technical difficulties, which rendered the audio useless. Yes. It was called him talking. Now, moving on. Okay. No, seriously. Well,
I see that your stand-up career is going to go as well as Dolph Ziggler's.
Yeah.
Well, he got the fuck Amy Schumer, so.
I will say that. And he, whatever horrible thing he's doing, he's probably getting paid for it. So there is always that. But having said that, no. Last month, Extreme Rules, we didn't have a reaction show. I want to apologize for that. That is on me. The file corrupted. I know Johnny Sorrow, of course, had a thumbs up. I had a thumbs in the middle. Pete had a thumbs up. And Chris, you had a thumbs.
In the middle.
In the middle, yeah. Dylan, what did you say? I didn't get the chance to listen to your show with Shake Them Ropes. How'd you rate last month's show?
I gave it a slight thumbs up.
Okay. So, yeah, I think we were all kind of in the same ballpark on that, you know. But anyway, so hopefully tonight we have some backup recordings. So this thing's going on air one way or another. So anyway, guys, let's jump into the show. Let's go to the pre-show matches. Unexpected match, R-Truth versus Stardust. Johnny, what'd you think about this opener?
Like you said, I didn't expect it. I turned around and went, wait, what? There's a match. And then ran over to watch it. And I really honestly don't have a lot to say about it. I was like, it was perfectly fine, I guess. And
it's a very good description.
I was like, yeah, I didn't care. The only thing I took from it is at the end, I guess, the shot of Cody, you know, looking like, you know, what the fuck am I doing is leading to him going to be dropping the gimmick. Apparently that's what I got out of it.
Dylan, I think in your book, that's a good thing, right? Dropping that gimmick.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just don't think there's really no point to it, especially because Goldust is, and now Goldust, of course, is out with the injury. So even if there was a tentative plan to do anything with him, which I doubt there was, that's out the window for at least the next 6 to 8 months. So given that there's no association there, I don't really see any reason to keep that gimmick going. It's not as if it was super over. Although as far as the match, I wouldn't call it a good match, but I actually thought it was a smart match in the sense that it was sort of worked like a house show opener. Like, with R-Truth sort of doing his pander to the crowd spots, and it was kept short, but it was deliberately worked in such a fashion as to, I think, work the live crowd, which is really what the purpose of those pre-show matches should be, in my opinion. So while I didn't think it was particularly good or bad for that matter, I actually thought it did serve its purpose.
I agree with you, man. I actually called it the most reaction Stardust has gotten in a singles match to this date. So
easily.
Yeah. Pete, what was your star rating for this opener?
I didn't give it one. It was just a serviceable match that got over with the crowd. So okay. It served its purpose.
Cool. Chris, anything to say about this before we move on to some more important matches like Curtis Axel and Macho Dow or
yeah,
whatever
couple,
the hell he's called?
A couple of quick things. As soon as Truth's music hit, I immediately knew he was working Stardust. I mean, that when the least surprising thing of the night, other than a finish to a certain match. Then I was pleased that they got the Vampiro Americano mention out on commentary for JBL. And they picked the Jerry Lawler DVD, and that DVD would easily be the most disappointing DVD that WWE has ever put out. And it's sad.
I'm hoping the documentary part is really good, but match selection is not.
But regarding the match itself, it was just there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on. Now, Dylan, I know you had strong feelings about Mizdow, but now he's now doing a Macho Man gimmick along with Curtis Axel's Hulkamania gimmick versus the Ascension, man. Why don't you talk about this and what they're doing with Mizdow right now?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I like Sandow. I think he's a talented guy. He's not a blowaway guy. He's probably never meant to be a main event star or a big time star. But they did have something with him. And I understand the criticisms of, that what were you going to do when that gimmick was over? It obviously wasn't going to go anywhere. And at the end of the day, he was going to be basically where he is now, which is a jobber. But they didn't really try to do anything with him after the gimmick was over. I mean, he lost the match to Miz. The crowd was amped and ready for him to win the Battle Royal at WrestleMania, which he didn't win. And I don't think he necessarily had to, but he could have. And they could have done something. I mean, Cena's been doing the open challenge for weeks. I argued that if they really wanted to get this guy over, they could have had him go out there and have a Cena open challenge match, go 15 minutes with Cena, and while he wouldn't have been made or anything like that, it would have at least given him credibility. He's somebody you could have put into something like the Intercontinental title match at the Elimination Chamber, and he was over enough where he would have had value. Now he's just a jobber, and it's unfortunate because this is a guy, like the brass ring comment, from the Austin, the famous Austin and Vince podcast. It's like, well, this is a guy who did try to reach for the brass ring in the sense that he was given shit, got himself over, went above and beyond, and what's he doing? He's doing a Jay Lethal ripoff gimmick. not even a Macho. and losing in a 4-minute squash to the Ascension. I mean, the match was okay for what it was. The crowd was super into it, which was cool to see. Because, again, I thought this was a good crowd on the show, which really helped the show. But the big takeaway for me from this was just feeling bad for Sandow. Because while he's not a guy who was ever going to be a super top star, there's absolutely no reason he couldn't be in that Intercontinental or U.S. title mix whatsoever.
Fair enough. Pete, what did you think about this? And what do you think about Sandow's new Macho gimmick teaming with Axel?
You know, it's cute for what it is. I couldn't believe that was actually Axel dressed up like the Hulkster. I thought that was a grade A Halloween costume. Sandow's one of those guys where, if he was the territories were still around, he probably would have had a really good, solid career working middle of the roads. But I just don't think it's just the cards aren't laid out for him in the WWE, and I don't think he'll ever never get over this hump.
Okay, fair enough. Chris?
I think that he's impersonating the wrong member of the Poffo family. I think the natural thing here should be that
the genius. Yeah.
He should be the genius, and Axel should be his dad. That should be the ripoff gimmick. He should be Mr. Person.
So, hold on. I guarantee you, 99.8% of the family has no idea who Angelo Poffo is.
No, I mean Lanny.
No, he means dude, you could do
the genius.
Didn't you just say his dad?
No,
Axel doing Mr. Perfect.
No, Axel doing his dad.
Oh, I thought
you. Will, I'm with you. I was like, what? He's going to come out as Angelo Poffo
and start doing 1,000 sit-ups?
Axel doing Mr. Perfect and Sandow doing the genius, and it would. I think it'd be awesome.
I think they might be leading up to that.
Maybe down the road. But regarding the match, just, it was funny watching this, this parody act there. And this is a match that Vince loves, I'm sure, because he loves these deals where he's making fun of people and relics of the past and stuff like that. And JBL was, going off on commentary with the lines that Vince gave him. So that's all this was. And regarding Axel looking like Hogan, I do have to admit that he must have went to Bret Michaels' hair guy to get that hair bandana combo to stay on there as long as it did. So props to him.
There you go. And Johnny, anything to say about this before we move on to the main show proper?
I thought it was fun. There was people in our house who were familiar with wrestling from the 80s. And immediately turned around and saw this. I explained it to them, and they loved it. So, it got over in my living room. So that's all that matters to me.
I do have to admit that finish was stupid, though. Don't you agree, Johnny, that the Ascension should not have gone over?
They're trying to build them up for the chamber. They're trying to build them up for the chamber because they've got to have strong tag teams going into that chamber match. And I think they see – I think the theory is the Ascension will bring a little bit of a different dynamic to the to that chamber match than the other teams, and we're going to make them look credible after we've destroyed them for the last 3-4 months.
Well, that's just plumb sad if that's how their buildup is, the build beat up a gimmick nostalgia a parody.
I agree.
Them up. But, oh, God, help us.
I think those guys will be in the match too, though. I think that the meta powers –
both teams,
will be in there as well.
I do love that it's the meta powers.
Even though they didn't call on that.
They never called on that. Oh, they don't? Okay.
Yeah, was that an announcer thing or an internet invention?
Internet thing.
Okay. So I didn't see the graphic, and when you guys were all typing meta powers, I was like, who would to explain to Vince what meta means?
Yeah, no, I call them the mega powers, man. I'm not calling them the meta powers. I like it.
I think Sandow's just fine. You know, he's earning a paycheck being silly. Yeah. Good for him. Yeah. But the match itself was
ultimately Johnny, and we're going to get to this later on. I think along with Sandow and other acts, it's not about earning a paycheck. It's about the size of the paycheck and the potential earnings versus the actual earnings. And I think that's
he might have potential merchandise earnings.
But that's what a complaint has always been. But let's move on to the show proper. We start off with Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler in a rematch from Extreme Rules. I really like the Extreme Rules match. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
I really liked it a lot. I thought the opening was really super hot and really got the crowd going. And Ziggler seemed more intense than usual, which is good because they had some pretty hardcore angles for PG-13 or whatever it is, or the PG rating. I mean, with the blood at the King of the Ring on the angle with Sheamus. So I thought the intensity and, you know, wanting payback for having after winning last time and then having to kiss Sheamus's ass. So I felt that was necessary. Sheamus is really good on top in this. I just felt I wish he was on top a little bit more. I thought Ziggler's forearms looked particularly nasty in the match. And I really thought it was a really good performance from Ziggler, where I thought he had nice babyface fire and he sold well underneath. The one thing I was confused about was it looked like first Sheamus dinged his knee, but they didn't really follow up on it, and everything was fine. Then Ziggler was selling his knee, but it didn't look like Sheamus worked it over at all. So I was a little lost there.
No, Sheamus was kicking the leg. He was going over. He was going over that leg.
All right.
Early on, he was definitely going over the leg.
But I thought Sheamus, when he was on top, I thought he was really good because he took his time and everything he did got over, even just a glare into the crowd and stuff. And that nasty broke kick after the blood stop, I think that was an audible. I don't think that was the plan. I mean, the broke kick might have been the planned finish, but I think they went right to the finish because there's no way the ref was stopping that that hardcore blood that Ziggler. I mean, that was nasty. I really enjoyed the match and gave it like 3.5 stars.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely picked up. It started out as we're like doing comedy stuff and, you know, worked around the ass spots and stuff like that. But yeah, they really picked it up towards the last 5-10 minutes of that match. And, no surprise that these guys, Sheamus is great and Ziggler, you know, can turn it on when necessary. So, it was really fun. And the blood definitely added the extra element to it. Ziggler needed 10 stitches after the show from what I read by Mike Johnson. So it was a pretty nasty cut. First of a few tonight, actually. So, the finish was fine. So yeah, real good.
Johnny?
I love this. I thought, I liked the callbacks to the kiss your ass shit, and it worked well within this just ass-kicking match. You can tell that Dolph Ziggler is bringing the serious now ass-kicker stuff because he's got a cut-off denim jacket. And
I called it his ode to Twisted Sisters, You Can't Stop Rock and Roll video jacket.
Yeah.
Well, I said he was an Iron Maiden fanboy against Sheamus.
Pink, white, and black, that's all Twisted Sister, bro.
Or you know, he's doing a tribute to the Outsiders, you know.
He's the lead heel on 21 Jump Street this week.
There you go. he's selling drugs on the playground.
He's one of the McQuaid brothers.
Yeah.
Somebody call Peter DeLuise.
I don't think he can afford a phone. I think what was fortunate was that the hard way cut happened towards the end of the match. So you're right. They definitely called an audible and went to the finish, but it wasn't like they had to do it where it was too early in the match that it made it like, it ruined the match because they had to go home too early. I thought it still worked. And, his head was split up like a melon, man. It was wild. Great match.
Hey, Dylan, I want to ask you about this, man. With all the blood that's come out the last couple of months, do you think, I mean, everyone's saying hard way. To me, it just seems like coincidence. I think they're testing the waters, bringing blood back and putting it in spots where it looks like it could be a hard way situation. What do you think? Do you think that they're testing the waters, bringing blood back? Or do you think that it just so happens we've had more blood on TV in the last 2 months than we have the last 6 years?
Well, I mean, I'll put it this way. I think Brock 100% bladed at WrestleMania. So to me, that was an absolute.
But then we have like Bryan the next week against.
We did.
Then we have the King of the Ring tournament. Then we have this. I mean, absolutely. That's a lot of blood.
It is. And it could be that people just say, well, Brock's due. If Brock does it, we're going to do it, which I wouldn't advise, given the unbelievable special treatment Brock gets. But I don't know. This absolutely looked hard way to me because I don't know where you would have even bladed. Like, it would have had to be.
He instantly touched his head right after the headbutt.
I mean,
on the replay, you could see that if he wanted a blade, he could have bladed. He could have cut himself instantly after the
headbutt. It looked to me like he was like, oh, shit, I just split my fucking head open.
That's what
great bladers do, right? Make it.
Yeah, but Dolph's a guy who has no experience blading at all. I mean, like, well, this is.
Maybe. I'm just saying, though, like, there was a point where if you wanted to argue he could have bladed himself. His hand clearly touched his forehead.
I don't think this was a blade job. Bryan may have been on SmackDown. That wouldn't shock me. I don't think this was. I totally agree that the finish was an audible. I said so on Twitter at the time. I thought it was pretty obvious that they immediately went to the finish, but it didn't hurt it because it made sense that would be the finish. I mean, the guy just murdered himself on the headbutt. And Sheamus's finish is very well protected. You know, I agree. Like, I thought it was cool that Dolph was trying different offensive things in this match, spots that we're not used to seeing. Because the big criticism of Dolph is that he's not a particularly good offensive wrestler. And I thought it was nice to see him try a few things, the crossbody off the top, the forearms Pete mentioned. So I thought that was a cool touch. He looked a little bit – I don't want to say sloppy is not the right term. He looked a little bit unsure of himself with some of that.
Or frantic, maybe?
Yeah, but it actually added to the match.
Yeah, I was thinking out of control a little bit here and there.
And I mean, but it added to the match in a way, you know, because it had that fight feel to it. Once they, you know, the back end of it, I think, got really, really good. I don't think it quite reached the level of being a great match, but it was close. And the finish was great, so I could totally see why someone would disagree and call it a great match. But to me, the biggest takeaway of that match was, Sheamus, I think, is a phenomenal wrestler. And I love the fact that he's a guy who changes his style in obvious ways, depending on whether or not he's a face or a heel. And, you know, the way he wrestles the heel is drastically different. He's a completely different animal. He still has a lot of the same spots, but he does them in totally different ways. He builds them in different ways.
He's way more comfortable. He's way more comfortable.
But hasn't he dropped the whole 10 pounds to the chest?
Yeah. Now his taunt is, are you entertained? Which is a hilarious troll. I mean, like, I find that I laugh my ass off every single time he does that bit. And I love the fact that he works the fierce chin locks where he's ragdolling the guys, if for no other reason than because it comes off as a huge troll of Joe Lanza and the Voices of Wrestling crowd don't work holds. You know, like, I really, really like Sheamus as a heel. I was a little bit concerned. Because I think he was such a great worker as a face, but he's shown that he can be every bit as good in the ring as a heel. So,
and on your chin lock talking point, it also makes him separate because no one else is doing that in the company, really. You know, Barrett does a little bit. But for the most part, no one else is really working that, and it's great.
Okay, well, I thought this was great. I thought it was better than last month's match, and. you know, the ending was definitely better than last month's ending. And I thought it was a fitting head. I like the fact that the headbutt cost him the match.
Yeah, yeah, so, I agree.
You know, to me, I mean, blood or not, the headbutt cost him the match. And the setup to the Cloverleaf was really awesome, too, because he had just hit him with the power bomb. He hit him with the running power slam. Then the white noise. And he's like, okay, if your back isn't broken yet, I'm going to hook you in the Cloverleaf. He was just too close to the ropes. Anyway, let's move on to the next match. New Day versus Cesaro and Kid. And Chris, what did you think about this tag team match?
Oh, I love this match. I love this feud. I love these two teams. Yeah, this it may have been a little too short for me. I thought it could have went a little longer.
It went almost 20 minutes, but, man. I mean, it was a long match.
Yeah, but two out of three falls, though. I mean, it just didn't seem like it was. It didn't seem like it was that long. It really did. So, yeah. I mean, those two teams have great chemistry together. Adam Jones at ringside, the outfit of the Orioles, wearing a Ron Simmons damn shirt while holding up a fake WWE title belt. This dude's a multimillionaire, by the way. And one of his teammates was also there, wearing a fake Stone Cold vest with no shirt.
It was the third guy, the guy in the DX jersey.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. You notice they didn't make that guy who dressed up as a character take it off and put on a t-shirt.
Yeah, so that was great. Cesaro and Big E they get to show off their strength in these matches, and both of them are very, very strong. And Cesaro, as a babyface worker, is fantastic. One of the best in the business. I like the Xavier calling the Freebird rules bit because it played into the finish. The multiple belly to belly throws was great, especially the one on the floor on Tyson. We got the spear through the ropes, which I love. The Don't Be a Menace stomp down spot. I love that. Just good stuff, man. And that guy, the uppercut in the corner, Kofi. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you know, you said that Big E and Cesaro have great chemistry, and they do. Cesaro is the perfect guy for Kofi to get a match out of, where Kofi looks like he should be in the ring. I mean, Dylan, disagree or agree?
Oh, no. They had two really good matches on Superstars a couple of years ago, one of which went like 20 minutes. A legitimately really good 20-minute Kofi Kingston singles match.
I remember that. That's right.
That's unbelievable. That's unheard of. That's like the Loch Ness Monster sighting. You know, like, and that doesn't happen. So, I thought it was, to me, this was like the best possible Young Bucks versus Red Dragon match, except with guys who do power spots. It was totally balls out. You know, there were a couple of minor flubs. You know, I do think it's weird that like 2 weeks, like twice in basically a week, because a similar spot happened on Raw, Cesaro has gone for some sort of, you know, suplex or power spot variation on Big E, and Big E has completely deadweighted him. And I can't tell if it's, at first I thought it was like on Raw, I thought like he had a concussion because of the way it happened. And this time I couldn't tell if it was that Big E was injured. I don't think that was the case, obviously, or if it was that they were trying to do a spot where he deliberately deadweighted himself so that Cesaro could show how strong he was. It was just that was kind of a weird botch, but it didn't hurt the match.
Well, the botch, Dylan, to me, the way I looked at it was Cesaro was trying to do one of those delayed suplexes that he does, like where he holds the guy for 5-6 seconds, and that, you know, just he held him too long. That's how it felt. You know,
I mean, it's possible, but there was a similar.
If he would have just gone straight over into like a, you know, a gut wrench or something, he would have gotten him over no problem. That's the way it felt to me.
There was a really similar spot on Raw, which is the only reason I noticed it. Like where he went for an overhead, and Big E obviously deadweighted him, and he did get him over that time. But you know, that's a minor. It's not even really a criticism because I didn't even think it hurt the match. Like they were so there's so many incredible spots that it really didn't damage the match. And actually, I had no problem with the time given. I think it was given more like 15 than 20, but I had no problem with the time the match got because the pace was so fast that I thought it was totally believable that these guys would be burned out in 15 minutes. I mean, that, you know, you could argue that they could have done more with a Face in Peril, and they did do some stuff with that.
Yeah, they did.
And that it would have been
the entire second fall was
yeah.
Face in Peril.
Yeah, and you could argue it would have been a better match if they had done more of it. But I thought it was great for absolutely great for what it was. So you know, I don't want to hold it against them for my idea of what they could have done when they performed very, very well for the style of match they went out and did. I joked about this on Twitter. I did think it was very brilliant and progressive of the WWE to do a finish in Baltimore where a authority figure as systemic racism screws over people. So that was a very timely and relevant finish.
But, all right. Johnny, what'd you think, man?
Well, yeah, but the black people won this time, so it was
That's true. That is true.
But they're positive. Black people.
Yeah. Okay. Very positive.
Johnny.
No, I love New Day since they've turned heel. And I love the match. You guys have talked about it. Pete, you're going to talk about it more. I just want to talk about the dynamic of both teams, of what's happened in wrestling. You got Cesaro and Tyson, who are just thrown together. It was like, yeah, okay, we're going to throw you together. You're a team. We got nothing for both of you. And here's the other team. We've got a big babyface push. We're going to spend a bunch of money on vignettes with gospel choirs. It doesn't work. And so we turn you heel, and suddenly, boom, you flower and explode. The other team becomes babyface because based on just work and the crowd getting behind them. And now Cesaro can do all of his spots that people want to cheer for anyway. And then so the culmination of how both switched – almost organically, and then, you know, people, you know, the powers that be, of course, said, okay, we're going to run with it this way. And then on top of that, the matches have been just outstanding. It's one of my favorite, it's probably my favorite thing going on in WWE right now is these guys wrestling each other and what's going on. And New Day is just the fucking new heroes, motherfucker. They just, outstanding.
Well,
outstanding.
What a novel concept that they actually follow through on some organic situations from the fans, because they have not done that a lot lately. And
that is very true.
And they've, you know, basically, you know, gone the complete opposite way. And this feud is a perfect example of when you do something like that, it works.
It's crazy over too. And by the way,
well, it's because Vince doesn't care about tag teams, so he's going to allow it to happen in the tag teams. True.
It's worth noting too that Xavier Woods is tremendous in his role.
He's a god right now.
The way he was
so
screaming.
Good.
Freebird so rules. Good. Freebird rules.
Oh no! When the crowd was chanting, "This is awesome!" He yelled. He's like, "We know that. You don't have to tell me that."
but to me, the fact that he yelled "Freebird rules" in that second fall to try and, you know, get Kofi out of there, and then that it played in the finish was just genius. Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, I want to say Woods, I feel, is the point man on the New Day, but all three of them felt so much more comfortable now as heels and actually embracing the heelness, where the last month they weren't quite there, but here, man, they felt like a seasoned act, and they were awesome, and I thought the match was incredible. I really liked the three falls, but one thing I thought was really cool was the story progressed and actually followed into the they didn't start from scratch on each different fall. They were doing this, and then they continued it into fall two and into fall three, and I thought that was really tremendous, and I think both acts are awesome. You can spin so many things. You get so many great singles matches, tag matches. You know, they can bring in a tag partner and do six-mans. They have so much they can do with this group and have a lot of fun with this feud. I feel it has a lot of legs still.
You can even do those intergender matches with Natalya.
Exactly. Yeah, Natalya and Xavier can be fighting in those six matches.
And keep in mind, guys, they're bringing Harper and Rowan back as a team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's another team that can work either one of these guys. And while I'm not a big fan of three ways, unless it's me and two women, that dynamic would be awesome, you know, because, you know, you have three different teams that are all great at what they do. So
talk about fantasy booking there. No,
that was a good one.
A good one. Then you can bring in the Usos when they get healthy, too. I mean, that's four. damn good tag teams. And maybe, I mean, even go back, maybe to go back to the Rhodes Brothers when they get healthy. I mean, there's a lot of
Lucha Dragons, or they're hanging around.
Yeah,
too.
Lucha Dragons getting pretty damn exciting. Hopefully they don't fuck it up.
They just need to find another Mexican and replace Sin Cara point blank. That guy is just a curse. He's just, yeah. I think the mask itself is just cursed.
Yeah, I like this match better than last month. I gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, Pete, it's a point. What was his name before he took over Sin Cara? He was
Hunico.
Hunico.
And you're like, Hunico's really good. And he puts on the cursed mask of Sin Cara.
But let's be fair to Sin Cara, though. He has had some good moments this year. Mainly against Cesaro. But yeah, he's had a pretty good year. For him.
Yeah. Well, that's like saying Kali had good moments against John Cena. I mean, you know what I mean? And that was where his only good moments. I'm done with the Sin Cara gimmick. I think it needs to disappear. It's not like they can't invent another mask.
Well, I agree.
I think it's cursed. I'm sorry. It's cursed.
I agree that it's ridiculous to do a recycled version of the gimmick. But the guy in it, I think he's had a lot of good performances this year. So I can't.
Dude, keep the same guy. Put a new mask on. You know?
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think it's kind of ridiculous to recycle it, but
okay, well let's move on and let's go on to Ryback versus Bray Wyatt. This match kind of shocked me, man. I thought it was really good. Johnny, what did you think of Ryback versus Cesaro?
I love this. I thought it was going to be better than most people thought, but I did not think it was going to be this good. This was a hoss fight, to use the old trope, and Ryback just selling the ribs like he's Ricky Morton on steroids and bald.
Hey, hold on, Johnny. Do you have people in your room?
Yeah.
Again, I'm hearing everyone in the background.
Sorry.
That's the DEA.
Well, let's go to someone else then. Let's go to someone else.
Okay.
While that's happening. How about you, Dylan? Ryback versus Bray Wyatt.
Love this. I thought it was entirely dependent on what Bray Wyatt showed up, because as I've argued, Ryback has had a sneaky good year this year. He's had some really good matches on TV. It's just people don't watch SmackDown. They don't really pay attention to Ryback, because while he's still over and at times there's a star, he's not really been in the mix. So he's just sort of quietly had good performances that nobody pays attention to. And I really thought this hinged on whether we got the good Bray or the bad Bray, and we got the good Bray tonight. You know, we got the Bray who works really stiff and will take a punch himself. The criticism of Ryback for a long time was that the guy couldn't sell. Well, in this match, he sold his ass off and
those
took
ribs,
a shitload of violence.
Oh,
I mean, that
ribs.
Senton was crazy.
Yeah, I thought he legit hurt himself. He sold so well.
I mean, he took a Stan Hansen level lariat on the floor. I mean, that was a brutal lariat that he ate on the floor. Seriously.
The frog splash later on?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, you got lots of big spots out of these guys, but they were well-timed big spots, and they felt super impactful because they obviously were. I mean, it was just crushing shots. And I thought the finish was really smart. You could argue that it wasn't, that they maybe could have built it a little bit more over the course of the match, but I was fine with it. I thought it was well done in the grand scheme of things. They did a reasonably good job of protecting Ryback in defeat. I mean, part of the problem they have right now is that they've got a roster full of guys who really can't afford to lose, but a loss like this isn't really going to hurt Ryback. So,
Well, let me ask you this, Dylan. Do you think it would have been since we know the Wyatt family is getting back together eventually anyway, right? I mean, it just feels that way, right? That eventually they're going to come back to Bray.
It seems like it.
You know, that Harper and Rowan could have come out. Ryback's like, you know, about to hit the meat hook and like, hey, what the hell is this? Turns around, you know, gets rammed into the turnbuckle on his ribs. Then Sister Abigail, 1, 2, 3, boom. Then you can kind of lead up to Harper and Rowan beating them down for the next matchup or something.
They could have done that, but I'm actually happy they didn't, especially given how the main event played out. Like if you weren't doing what you were doing in the main event, that would have been perfectly fine. But given what they were doing in the main event of the show, I'm just as fine, if not happier, with this. To me, it was really good. I thought it was almost as good as the match that preceded it. Not quite, but in the neighborhood.
Yeah, so far, the first three matches, the Ziggler match, the tag match, and this match, I thought all three of them were right there on that same level, man. Just yeah. Great match after great match after great match. Pete, what would you think about this Big Hoss match?
Yeah, you guys hit it. I didn't like it as much as you guys, but I liked it a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I gave it 3 stars, but I mean, it's not a bad. I like the other matches better, but this is pretty damn good, and it was a great Wyatt performance and Ryback. Yeah, I mean, you guys, Dylan covered it pretty damn well.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree with what was already said. I thought this was
probably well. Hold on, hold on. Do you agree more with me and Dylan or with Pete?
Oh, with everybody else. Yeah, this was probably my second favorite match of the.
Hold on, hold on. That was still pretty fucking big.
Everybody else agreed except for Pete. God damn it. This was probably my second favorite match of the show.
Okay.
It makes a difference when Bray isn't jobbing the Cena, Jericho, and Undertaker, how he performs in matches, you know? So, yeah. I mean, and the finish was cool because they hardly ever do those turnbuckle spots. So it was a fresh finish. And it made sense. So, yeah.
Okay. John,
and
are
I
you
just
back?
I'm back. I'm sorry about that. I just wanted to add in I think the Wyatt family reunion is definitely going to happen because the back of Bray's t-shirt pretty much says so. Is the new shirt he's wearing, it says, "Follow the light, it will lead you back home." That's the most least cryptic Bray Wyatt thing I've ever seen in my life. So, yes. But perhaps they're going to do that on television rather than on pay-per-view.
Yeah, one possible. Thing about Wyatt, though, is the heat level for him is non-existent. And basically all it is just people holding their phones up. That's all it is. There's no reaction at all.
Well, there was also the split crowd thing. I noticed that during this match, there's people who want to cheer him. So there was a definite.
I will say this: if they do turn him, which you know, it would be different. A series with Rusev would be pretty awesome.
Yes, I agree with that.
I wouldn't be surprised if he cost the New Day the titles at the Elimination Chamber, and that and again goes to Harper and Rowan.
Yeah, it's possible
too. Oh my God, they could have a feud over biblical interpretation.
Exactly.
Oh hey.
No. Come on.
We're gonna go with Florida rednecks versus positive black guys.
Yeah, well, Bray is
Southern Baptist versus
and both
Southern
Baptists. No, dude. You got your TD Jakes crowd versus your snake handler crowd. Absolutely.
Holy and they're both shit. Heels. And they're both heels, too, which is great.
That would be the best gimmick in history.
Then we have snakes in a coffin match. And yeah,
really. And then the Ascension turns out they're atheists. And then they join it into the future.
You know, the Creflo Dollar could come in and talk about his $65 million jets.
Well, given the way the Ascension's career has gone since they've been there, I'd stop believing in God, too.
And then you can have HBK bring in the Hagee crowd to get him out of retirement. You know, Hagee can have their tag team.
No, then Benny Hinn comes down and knocks people out by waving at
them.
That'd
be the way to get Khali back, I guess.
Yeah. To be fair, God has already jobbed on a WWE pay-per-view, I think.
Yes.
So, you know, he may come back for revenge. That's possible.
Yeah, he didn't get his payout, I'm sure. I'm sure they didn't pay him off.
He's got to get his heat back.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, God bless all of you. Let's move on. All right. Dylan, I want you to talk about this in two parts. First, the match proper. And then the booking, which was so predictable, which we're going to talk about when we get to the main event, Cena versus Rusev. What did you think of it as a match? And then what did you think of the booking at the end?
As a match, I mean, let me put it this way. This is my opinion of the match. It's going to be more interesting to listen to the totality of opinions on this match than anything, because I think it's going to be the most polarizing match perhaps of the entire year. It reminds me a lot of the Cena-Orton I Quit match that they did several years ago, where you had one crowd of people that absolutely loved it. They thought it was great storytelling. They thought the build was really good to the big spots. They thought it was consistent with the characters of each guy. And then you had the other side that thought it was too drawn out and really hokey and typical overexposed WWE tropes that you get in every single one of these matches. And as is rarely the case, I find that I am I was the moderate on that match, and I feel like I'm probably going to be the moderate on this match. I thought it was a really good Rusev performance, who I think is, with the exception of Roman Reigns, the best in-ring performer in the company this year. And so I, from that perspective, I thought Rusev was awesome. I love the stuff before the bell, the old like 1985 style. I'm going to give you a chance to quit now. I love that shit. I always mark out for that, especially when it's delivered well. I thought his body language and his selling and the delivery of his offense throughout the entire match was really good. I thought the match escalated pretty well in the way that you would want it to escalate in terms of the build to the bigger spots and like the crazier stuff and things of that nature. I didn't think this was a particularly good John Cena performance. I didn't think he was awful, but there were moments when I thought he was pretty bad.
What was the bad? Because I didn't really think Cena was awful. You gotta give me an example of that.
Well, first of all, I mean, his punches are never good anymore.
That is true.
They stand out as particularly bad in a match like this, which is theoretically a blood feud, because that's what he usually uses for his comeback. I thought his comebacks were, you know, like, for example, early in the match when he comes back with the shoulder blocks, you know you're going to get that out of every Cena match. It's fine or whatever. But in the past, it seemed like when he would make those comebacks, there would be a little bit more nuance to them in terms of how he was selling and show and registering pain. He just kind of does them now and doesn't bother to register pain until after the fact, if at all. That's a minor criticism. It doesn't really kill a match for me, but it's more of an annoyance because I know he's capable of better. Having said that, he did take some big time bumps in this match, and it's not like he didn't show up at all. I just thought he was the weaker of the two guys. The thing that I think hurt the match the most in my eyes was, when they were doing the obligatory, because it's an I quit match, do you quit spots? They were doing them way too much. I just thought there was way too much asking on the mic.
I'm actually going to defend that real quick.
Go ahead. Because
I'm sorry to defend. Let me explain.
Fine.
Early on, if you noticed, because Rusev was on offense the early portion, right? And yes, you could clearly tell that motherfucker just wants his belt back. He just wants the U.S. title back. He wants that prestige back. And he's so arrogant that he's having the ref ask him after nearly every other move, you know, ask him, tell him to quit. Now, hold on. But then the first time that Rusev was asked to quit was after the slam on the steps. What was it? When he went through the steps. That was the first time. The second time was after he got shouldered on the ring post. Then they did the tell him I'm going to put him through the wall if he doesn't quit now. And he said no, and then he went through the wall, and he still said no. So I thought that they really kind of strengthened Rusev there, where before they even bothered to ask Rusev if he was going to quit, you had to use all that plunder.
I will say this, I'll transition to the booking by talking a little bit about that aspect. I didn't like a big part of it too, was that I didn't like Cena's responses. Like, I mean, this is going to sound ridiculous.
That might be fair
but
criticism.
This is going to sound ridiculous because we're talking, he's not a trained voice actor, but when you're, it doesn't say, I mean, he just didn't sound like he was in pain or in any damage, hardly at all. There was just too much of that. I'm not a fan of I quit matches in general, with the exception of Tully Magnum and Flair Funk. I don't necessarily think they're bad. I just don't love the stip. So it's not really in my wheelhouse anyhow for that reason. But I will say, people are going to shit all over the finish. And I thought it was a really inconsistent and dumb finish, because you had Cena passes out from the pain, and that doesn't count. But somebody else comes up and comes in and gives up for you, and it does. I mean, I thought that was fucking dumb.
I agree with that. I thought that the accolade into the pass out was going to be the finish, or at least hold the belt up or something.
Having said that, they clearly tried to protect Rusev in this match, much more than they did in the last match. They clearly tried to protect them by the way, like you said, the way he was answering, the way that the match progressed and the finish, I think we're all designed to try and protect Rusev. The problem is, this is a feud, or at least a match in this case, that Rusev really needed to win. And so you can't, like, the question, where do you go with Rusev from here? I mean, he can't wrestle Cena. I guess he can, but why would he?
They made this the last match. They pretty much said that.
He can't wrestle Cena again, and I don't really know where you go with him from here. He's not dead in the water in the sense that he's such a good performer. I think there's going to be a decent spot for him.
Well, he's Bray Wyatt. He's going to beat everybody but the top guys.
Yeah. And I mean, it sucks because he had a real opportunity to be a made guy coming out of this program, and they tried to protect him at the last second, and it just wasn't enough. I mean, it's just not going to be enough, maybe in another year.
I think maybe it wouldn't have been so bad if Rusev wins the U.S. title last month on some kind of chicanery where Cena doesn't get pinned, and then they do this bullshit. You know, it's just but three losses in a row. This is what losses matter. Perception matters.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks like a loser. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it doesn't matter how much you try to protect him in that last defeat. I mean, ultimately, he still looks like a loser. And he's a guy whose gimmick was that he was a winner.
Yeah. What about you, Pete? Where do you stand?
It's not my type of thing. It's not my cup of tea. It felt more like a movie, so I just not something that resonates at all with me. With that said, I thought Rusev's performance, like Dylan said, was great. Like that, like his facials, like when he found the pyro thing and his light, his eyes lit up and his mouth. Yeah, it's like, you know, all those little things he was fantastic at. So I don't want to bury his performance. I've seen his performance, didn't bother me at all. And he took, like you said, took big bumps, but all the weapons and stuff, it just doesn't feel real to me.
Wow, okay. Johnny?
I thought the match was fucking killer. Just going into Rusev's facials, just amazing. Yeah, just the emotion he was showing with just facial expressions throughout this match was fucking outstanding.
Well, let me ask you. I know because you were really happy that your nephew was happy that Cena won. But so you're glad Cena won. You think he should have beaten Rusev in this match?
I don't know how you drew that conclusion by the fact that I was happy that my nephew was happy.
Because you said on the board, thumbs up for you.
Stars. For me, it's a billion stars, a thumbs up. That a little kid was so excited to see his hero win that he ran outside and jumped up on a trampoline for 15 minutes, going, John Cena won the battle. Maybe it that does influence me somewhat. But I thought the match was really, really good. A great brawl.
Hold on, Johnny. I want to make it sound like I was picking on you, but it really did feel like you felt like that was the right call. And Dylan just spent like 5 minutes explaining it was the wrong call. So I just want to know where you stand. Okay, I'm not going to bring up your nephew. I wasn't trying to demean that. It just sounded like, reading your comments on the board, it sounded like you felt that was the right call. So do you think that was the right call, with nephew withstanding?
Well, Carl Jung, the right call? Yeah, I do. I like the finish. I like the ending. I like the idea that apparently no is just yet, but yes is a bunch of language because he was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. She's like, he's saying he quits. And I was like, it's still, he didn't say the actual words, I quit, which is always
So that was a good enough cop out for you.
No, that's the MacGuffin of I quit matches is that, Tully never said I quit. Tully said yes, yes, yes. So it's always the out in an I quit match for the heels that he didn't say the actual words. Be it the manager throwing the towel, be it Gary Hart pretended it was Chris Adams, but it was him on the mic. They did that. There's always a million ways out of an I quit match for the heel. And like Dylan just said, that's the way they protect. That's exactly what they were doing. Whether or not it worked or not, it's up to.
Ultimately, what they did wrong is they're trying to send two different mixed messages. One, they're trying to move Cena a little bit down the card where he's not in the main picture, but they're also trying to elevate the U.S. title. so they give him the U.S. title, so he can't do the jobs. And then they bring out this hot heel in, and then they pair him together. So they should have, but they should have waited until they're ready to let Cena lose, and then book this feud.
Well, here's the thing:
Cena's been building up the title with the challenge thing on the TV. More so,
right? But the point is that his main feud throughout the entire thing has been Rusev.
But see, here's the deal: I wouldn't even necessarily have a problem with Cena being the one who beat Rusev, even though I don't think he should have. Even though I think ultimately Rusev should have won the big match at Mania, or if not that, which I think was at least a little bit more justifiable to understand given how it was presented. I think if you were gonna, if you decided for some reason that you wanted Cena to beat the guy, to be the guy who kills Rusev's streak and, you know, have him even win a feud, you can do that, but you have to find another way to make Rusev a guaranteed star, which means maybe 6 more months of Rusev doing his thing. They always do this. They get a guy who they've warmed up and they've heated him up, and it looks like it's almost a sure thing that this person's going to be made. And then they kill him. And it's not like he's dead. It's not like his career is over or anything like that. But it's going to take a long time again to heat him back up to that level, which would be okay if this was a company filled with stars that are ready made. But
yeah, that's
it's not
the problem right there, because even Cena's so far on the pecking order compared to everyone else underneath him. So anyone who Rusev beats before Cena to build to that feud, it doesn't matter because they're not over enough in the fans' eyes.
Well, let's see what Chris has to say. What do you got, Chris?
If Rusev had won at Mania, I have no problem with this finish. Because, you know, if they played this up as the final battle between these two guys. And in feuds, babyfaces win in the end. You know, that's pro wrestling. But Rusev...
Except when they don't, but I agree.
Rusev needed that signature win over Cena, and he should have beat him at Mania. And then you could have Cena beat him at Extreme Rules that way, and have this be the blow-off. So... yeah, Rusev definitely, you know, got chopped off. But one thing that, you know, hadn't been talked about so far is Lana was really good tonight in her role. She showed the emotion, the right amount of emotion. She played her character right with Rusev, you know, talking down to her. And definitely the finish was so obvious. But I thought it would have been a cooler finish, though, if this gives Rusev the win. If Cena, you know, if Rusev goes over there and Lana, you know, has done something to piss him off and Rusev's like threatening to hit her, and Cena says, "I quit," to stop him from doing that. So I kind of like what he did with Edge, where he saved Edge from like being paralyzed and brought back the authority.
Does she say, "I just want to talk to Tom"?
Or something, yeah, some BS like that. But you know, the deal with Rusev is Rusev, he's getting both ends of the spectrum of being with Lana. You know, the connection with Lana definitely helped him get pushed and got him, you know, where he was at in a lot of ways. And now the connection with Lana is hurting him because now they're breaking him up and she's going to be the big star and he's going
to
be...
That remains to be seen.
Vince loves her. So,
doesn't matter.
It does.
We'll see how big of a star she's actually able to transform.
If it doesn't matter, Randy Orton wouldn't have been in the ring. Main event of the show.
Okay, here's one thing about that. I read someone say there's like, and now Rusev is just Mark Marrow to Sable. And I'm like, no, here's the difference. Because Rusev is awesome and Mark Marrow is, you know, was fucking...
I don't know, man. I think I wouldn't be shocked if they ripped that brass ring that Rusev has grabbed. Because he really got it over, and he's become a hell of a performer, and he should be still. But I'm nervous because they usually,
you know what, the only
breakups they happen.
You know what, the only thing that I think could actually maybe work, they won't do this because I think Ambrose is winning the Intercontinental title. But what they should do is have Rusev win the IC title in the Elimination Chamber and build up to a Rusev versus Cena match, maybe even to unify the belts. Maybe at Survivor Series or something, and have Rusev go over clean. Like that is the only way that I think you could really speed up the process of getting Rusev back to the level where he was before this.
But Dylan, my only argument there would be, and I agree with that, except the great thing about Rusev holding the U.S. belt was that he was the Russian holding the U.S.
Yep,
belt.
Yep, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
And so, what I wanted to clarify, I'm not saying they're not going to push Lana to the moon. But the idea that she's just automatically going to be a star. I mean, you push somebody so you're...
Yeah, because they can't do the Playboy pictures. They can't do, like, the same.
They're already piping in Chance. If you watch tonight, that We Want Lana Chant was obviously piped in. Because I did not see, especially on the camera side, fans were not chanting. So unless it was coming from way up high at the top, you know, out of camera range, that loud, yeah, they were piping in chants.
Okay, so and I haven't heard anybody say that those chants are piped in.
Well, usually the people excited and chanting are in the cheaper seats.
And Rusev, and we got to admit this too, ever since they've started this friction, he has become an excellent promo. His character has grown in this spot. He's taken control instead of standing in the background while Lana talked. So we got to give him credit on that too.
True.
Okay. Well, let's take a break real quick. And when we come back, we'll look at the last three matches. You're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including The Main Event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net's Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
A host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And, of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Okay, welcome to the Place to Be Nation. This is Will. I'm joined with the reaction crew here tonight, and we're talking Payback 2015 on the WWE Network. We just got finished talking about Cena versus Rusev, and we're about to go into the Bellas tag match. Naomi and Tamina Snuka versus the Bellas. And Pete, did you give this a star rating?
Half a star.
Okay. Well, do you want to say anything about her, or you want to move on?
It was just a train wreck. I don't know who it was. It was either Naomi or the Snuka girl. But they were one. She was in her ground and pound. She was like whiffing her punches. This thing was just a train wreck. And after what happened to Bree's husband, she really shouldn't be taking header bumps into the guardrail. I mean, that's just insane for a nothing match.
Yeah. What do you got about this, Chris?
I love Nikki Bella, but this was not good. Bree did not look good at all here. I don't know if Brian is on her mind for real or what, but she was out of it. And Tamina is rusty. And obviously it's going to build Naomi and Nikki. But one thing we got to mention though, is before the match, that the promo with the New Day were celebrating with their wine glasses of milk. Where they were doing a milk toast, which is
well, we didn't really have to mention it, but you did. So it's okay.
Well, yeah, but
it was better than this match.
It was better than the match, and it was so awesome for their character that they're drinking the milk, and then Big E doing the whole milk spit take when they announced the Elimination Chamber was fantastic.
Well, what they said was they did the thing where Xavier was like, "We don't spit, we don't curse, we never complain." And then, of course, they did all of the above when they discovered they were
in their pinkies.
Yeah. And then Brian Saxon's punchline at the end, that was pretty damn good, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was way better match.
Okay, Johnny, did you take a piss break during this match? Or
only for a second, and then came back and was just like, there you go, whatever. Okay. I like the idea of Tamina Snuka as the big.
So you wait, hold on. So you went to the bathroom. You went to the bathroom with Nikki Bella on your mind. Is that what I'm hearing?
Only for a second, Pete.
Only for a second.
No. I went to the bathroom with Tamina Snuka on my mind, and then I jerked off, and it only took a second. There you go.
All right. Well, that was some deep insight from you, Johnny. Dylan, you said you were going to speak about an hour on the Bellas. What do you got?
Yeah, I got about 45 minutes or an hour on the Bellas. This was a bad match. The worst Divas match in a while, which is saying something. Although they've had some decent outings here or there. I thought Tamina was every bit as bad as Brie in this. Like
that spot where she
like was clearly out of place during the rope running spot. I mean, like she botched the one decent thing they had built to in the match, which was the near fall for Naomi's ass bump spot. I mean, that was just a colossal fuck up for somebody who's really only expected to do one thing in a brief match. It wasn't any good. I do wonder, because they did a promo on the pre-show with the Bellas where Brie did this like emotional promo about Daniel Bryan's condition and everything. And I wonder if they're actually going to build this to where they do a bit where Naomi is pissed off that nobody cares that her husband's out. And they like, I normally would think that they would never do that, but the way the promo was presented on TV was so, it's tough to tell because Brie Bella is such a terrible actress, but it was so melodramatic that it, you know, it didn't come across like even the least bit sincere. So I wonder if they're maybe going to turn this into an angle about their respective husbands' injuries.
Well, they played up the family thing with the fact that we're real family. You Samoans are all family. Sure. Because she's married to a Samoan and she's, you know, Jimmy Snuka's daughter, who's from Fiji, but they're all connected.
Yeah, they're all the same.
And then Nikki Bella's line read of, and we're family. Well, no shit, you're twins. We fucking know that. I mean, that's just about as bad as it gets.
No, she was talking about Daniel Bryan. Then, to be fair, she said, okay. She says, and he's family.
Okay, and, I thought it was that we're family.
But then she said,
and she pointed at the two of them.
But she said, but me and Brie have been family since day one.
That was the big comeback, yeah. But I don't know, man. I mean, I guess the big difference is Uso's injury is for a couple of months. Daniel Bryan's is for an undetermined amount of time. He could have very well wrestled his last match. So, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know, man. I watched that Daniel Bryan tribute video. And it's too bad they didn't show him that much respect when he was the hottest guy in the company. You know, I kind of wish they would have shown him that kind of.
Yeah, I wish they would have had him win the belt at WrestleMania 30. Oh, wait.
Oh,
yeah. Here we go. I wish he would have actually. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we can go back there when he should have won the Royal Rumble last year. I mean, you know, whatever. You know, we've already established that, you know, that was, what do they call it, money left in the bank. So, yeah. You know, let's move on. So we got Chris, your boy Neville, the man gravity forgot, versus King Barrett. What'd you think about this?
They've had a few matches lately, and I thought this was probably one of the lesser of the matches, if not the lesser of the matches. I don't know. So the timing seemed off here in a few ways. Neville had a couple botches. You know, it's good that he's working Barrett, not working guys like Kane and Big Show. So that's one good thing for Neville's prospects. But the fact that they, on television, that, you know, they've done pretty good with him lately, especially Monday with Cena, you know, not jobbing him out and having him look strong and kicking out of the AA. And then you have this situation tonight where they had just a total shitty finish. Just a total buzzkill. And they did let him get shine at the end, but my God. I mean, why that finish made no sense. None at all.
Yeah. Johnny, what'd you think?
I thought the finish was just like any other finish you guys would see back in the old days where neither guy is going to lose. So they do the heel walks away, then comes back in, and the babyface gets to hit his move, and no guy has to lose. So I thought that was pretty well done, given that it's always that deflating thing, you know, when it's a count out and the heel walks away, and you're like, oh, that stinks.
I just didn't think that they gave us enough before the finish.
No,
hold on. If it would have been like a really hot 15-minute match,
yes.
And then they walked away. Right. I still would have bitched about the finish.
But do you think his knee was really hurt or not?
Oh no, I didn't think so.
That,
I
mean, there was belief that people thought that may have been a legitimate thing there, but I don't know. I don't think so either.
But I just think that Vince looks at him and is so conflicted because the crowd loves him. But he's short. But he's jacked.
Yeah, they obviously don't know what to do with him yet. They give him the hope, you know, some wins and all this other stuff, and have him, you know, have that match with Cena, yeah. And then they do shit like this.
They put him in the death slot tonight too, which I.
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh well, no, hold on. To be fair. They put the women on right after Cena Rusev, which was a really hot match. I thought that they did these guys a favor.
Yeah.
If you want to look at however, I think if you put this match on first and you put Sheamus versus Ziggler on this level, Sheamus Ziggler could carry the match they had at this point in time, and you're still going to get a lot of heat because Ziggler's over. And people like to give Sheamus shit about his hairdo and stuff. Whereas nobody really cares about Barrett all that much anymore. And Neville isn't really that over. I mean, they were getting Stardust-level reactions.
NXT is over, the chant, more than Neville is, basically.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's my problem, though, and I'm going to get Dylan and Pete's take on this, is that, you know, every time I see Neville on WWE TV, the man that gravity forgot, oh my God, I can't wait till you see this guy fly. And see, well, you know, besides the arrow, was it the red arrow?
Yeah.
He doesn't really do anything that's like jaw dropping or awe inspiring.
He did more against Cena than just about anybody else.
Yeah, but do you understand what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Like Rey Mysterio, the great thing about Rey Mysterio, that's why he could have, like, and Dylan, you'll back me up on this, he could have those great 7-minute matches or those great 15-minute matches, is that the guy was always, you know, he had to use his speed and agility as his weapon, so he was always on the go. Always on the go. And he was always coming up with new and innovative ways to escape.
But Mysterio also could sell.
No, I know. I understand that. But what I'm saying, though, is that – but at the same time, he was so much more exciting. And even Evan Bourne, I thought when Evan Bourne came out as like the little engine that could, I thought he was more dynamic and exciting than Neville, who's this guy. I mean, because I've seen Neville. I've seen Pac work on the indies. And whatever you want to say about his indie work – you know, and I know some people aren't fans of it. A lot of that stuff left you with your jaw dropping, like, holy shit, how did he pull that one out? And it, you know what I mean? It wasn't just one move. It was like a series of jaw-dropping moves. I'm not saying that's what you want to do with him, but if you're going to promote him that way, then let him do that. You know, that's just kind of my I'm more bothered with the way that they promote him, you know, as this new super Daredevil guy who doesn't really do a lot of Daredevil things except for his finisher.
And goes down to the layout of the matches, too.
No, I agree. I mean, Dylan, what do you think?
I think the matches are better not work that way, honestly.
But at the same time, don't you think that the way that they're promoting him kind of he's really not that exciting when I watch.
I mean, that may be fair. I see what you're getting at, but I think part of the problem too is he's just simply not that charismatic. I mean, I think he's gotten pretty well over. I mean, he's done better than I would expect it, to be honest, already on the main roster. But having said that, I think the big difference between him and Evan Bourne, for example, is not so much – because it's not like Evan Bourne was throwing out high spots left and right. In fact, Evan Bourne's high spots were dramatically toned down in the WWE. It's that he
built
was
him because he had great psychology.
And he was a tremendous bumper.
And sold.
His ass off. And he was very charismatic and had an underrated, like, worker's charisma, which Neville, I think, he's actually impressed me more on the main roster than he ever did in NXT. But he doesn't have that charisma. And this match is a perfect example. I mean, the match was, you know, okay, you guys ready for a really bad joke? This was the match that quality forgot.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
I see. I'm setting it up because the crickets are actually literally chirping outside of my house where I am, and I was hoping that we would actually be able to pick that up. But whatever.
well, there were crickets going on in the arena. That's for sure.
So this was actually pretty disappointing because these guys have had good matches, and Neville's coming off that great match with Cena from Raw. I really was anticipating this being, even given, you know, not a ton of time, I figured this would be at minimum a really good match, and it was just there. I thought it was one of the weaker matches on the show.
Oh, definitely one of the weaker matches. I mean, on the main roster, on the main show, I thought this was the second weakest match of the night behind the Divas. You know, if this four-way main event didn't deliver, I was going to say great, great first half, you know, horrible second half, but we'll talk about the main event in a minute. Chris, what do you got on this?
I've already talked about
it. Pete, I'm sorry, Pete.
I think you guys covered it. I mean, the finish, I thought the finish sucked in 1980 and the finish sucked here. And it had its moments. I mean, I like the opening salvo, and I like Barrett's cutoff, but then it just kind of petered out and became a pretty blah of a match.
The best spot in the whole segment was the deadlift German after the match.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought that the post-match was more interesting than the match itself, actually. You know? Yeah,
do you guys think he hates wearing that cape, and that's why he takes it off so damn quick?
Yes.
Okay, yes. That's totally. I think, too.
Because he looks like a fucking hobbit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't imagine that he wants to wear it. So someone, you know, I think they're still playing around with that Mighty Mouse.
Or, you know, yeah, the Mighty Mouse. You think about it, he has the big nose like a mouse and the big ears.
Oh, my God.
And then with a cape.
No, you know that they were going to –
Really?
There were talks of him actually being Mighty Mouse. Like
right,
Mighty
right.
Mouse.
No, and he actually kind of does look like a Mighty Mouse, actually, with the cape.
So did Meltzer report that or not? I swear.
No.
Chris.
People took that too literally. He said – they're thinking of like sort of a Mighty Mouse type of gimmick, meaning a little guy who is huge and muscular and can kick ass.
No, Donnie, Vince wanted a superhero character, a little superhero.
Right, but he's got that. But people were actually going, oh, he's going to come out with a mouse outfit
on. Not like that, but you know, the little superhero type deal. Yeah, they weren't going to do Mighty Mouse because that's trademark infringement. But
if they could, they would, guaranteed.
No, I read people
No, they were going to put a mask on it, though. They were definitely going to put a mask on it. That was
okay. Well. That's because he's ugly as shit.
He does have some weird.
But one funny thing that came out of this though was Lance Storm tweeted out that in all seriousness, and you can see Lance saying this, I'd have given anything to work with Adrian Neville on pay-per-view on ECW in 1999. So,
well, he had a good match with Tommy Dreamer. Right? Like, well, that one match?
The end match? That miracle match?
I'd have given everything to have a terrible match with this talented young man.
He had a great handicap match against the Heavenly Bodies in Smoky Mountain Wrestling when they just put heat on him and let him do his own shine. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, no, Storm has had performances, but for the amount of credit he gets, I think it's disproportionate.
Oh, for sure.
If I can be serious for a moment, Lance Storm is fucking terrible.
No. Lance Storm's best move ever was the annoyed, like, quick look over at the guy interrupting him. You know, it's his best move.
It's his best work. Actually, I thought was in WCW when he was doing these 5-7 minute matches built around the Maple Leaf. Doing that finish, which is, he did it pretty smooth, and so it was pretty easy to work the back and build to that.
Okay. So let's move on. Because really, we're not going to make this a Lance Storm podcast. So. Let's move on. Four-way main event, Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton. And as I predicted, Kane was heavily involved in this. But, you know, I don't know. I kind of like the match. Johnny, I know you loved it. How much did you love it?
Oh, I did. It was my favorite match of the night. But I thought it was a fucking blast. I know that the fact that if Kane is even breathing the same air as people in a match, that Will is going to just immediately.
Yeah, man. I mean, I fully own up to it, too. It's not like I'm hiding from the fact either. I think it sucks that he's in the position he is 20 years later. You know,
he's a manager, so it's okay. he's, you know, basically in this way, he was an interfering, ass kicking manager, which worked for me because every time he did anything, someone kicked his ass. So
an ass-kicking manager works for you? That's cool.
No. With this, yeah, it does. With this, this is what they did with him. It wasn't like he was.
Who was the,
like,
last good ass-kicking manager?
And name one.
No, I'm saying this is what.
Holy Tommy Rich. Tommy Rich.
There you go. Fuck you. Wildfire Kane. No. Besides Kane.
Dude, that is blasphemy, fucking putting Tommy Rich in the same sense as Kane. No fucking way. Because Tommy Rich was as big of a stooge as it got when he was on the outside.
What about Ole Anderson as a manager of the Horsemen?
Maybe Ole.
Yeah, like Ole would ever.
That sucked, dude. Ole sucked, man.
Yeah, but Ole sucked.
Yeah, but he still kick ass.
He's still a piece
of
shit.
He may not have been good, but he's still.
I'm just saying, Kane, for every interference a spot he did, he got fucked up about something. So, you know, I'm good with that then. And I like a corporate Kane, the entire concept of it. But besides that, I thought this was just an entertaining WWE main event clusterfuck thing. The Shield reunion spot that we all knew was coming. Everyone was looking forward to that, the Shield spot, the triple powerbomb. Everyone knew it was going to happen. And the fact they did it on the outside, and I knew that you were going to do it to Randy, of course, but did it outside through the table, and the crowd went fucking apeshit. And I just loved the fact that Rollins, you know, puts out his fist. You know, and for a split second, I'm thinking, the Shield reunion? No. And Reigns and Ambrose look at him like, you know, sorry, Curly, and, you know, Moe and Larry just knocked them. And then it started kicking ass. And,
do we lose Johnny again?
Get back in the match. I hope not.
You're going in and out, Johnny.
Okay, how's that?
Yeah, you sound great.
God
now.
Damn this fucking show.
Just finish up your thoughts on the match, man. Let's roll on.
Okay, see, the one thing that I liked about the whole Kane thing is that everyone was going, is he going to factor into the finish with who's he going to side with? The fact that they got that out of the way at first sort of put that whole storyline dynamic on the back burner and got rid of it. Is that, is this going to be about who Kane decides who he's going to be with? They got rid of that right away, which I thought was smart.
Okay, fair enough. Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was fun, the match. There was a lot of like neat stuff, man. I actually felt bad for Kane, but I'm laughing because I was like, I bet Will's loving this when the crowd's going one more time, where they wanted to put him through the table and stuff, because it looked pretty stiff where he landed the first time. I thought Reigns, his charisma, I thought was really, really cute. Came across super charismatic in this match. I thought there was a lot of cool moments that it actually the TV caught that I don't think the live experience would have caught. But overall, it was fun. But I really thought the interference spots were kind of annoying.
Okay, what'd you give it a star rating?
I give it about 3.5 stars, though. Overall, it was a lot of fun. Typical clusterfuck WWE main event.
Okay. And Chris, what'd you got?
I thought the main event was good in certain spots, especially when the Shield were in there together. I thought that the everything involving those three, when it was just those three, whether it was paired off in twos or paired off in whatever, that it was really strong stuff, especially the tees, which I was so hoping for that was going to, you know, what was going to happen. And if they would have ended it that way with the Shield getting back together, that'd have been awesome. It really would have been awesome. But
what do you do, man? All three of those guys as heels against Orton? I mean, oh, man, I do not want Randy Orton to be the de facto babyface.
No, not really against Orton, against the Authority.
So turn Rollins face.
No, they're not really faces or heels. They're the new
Authority.
They're their own thing. They're like they were before when the Shield first started, when they, you know, they weren't really facing their heels. They attacked what was right for justice. And it would have been, and that would have been the way to bring Brock back, is the only person that the Authority could get to limit the Shield would be Brock Lesnar. So I think that'd been a cool way to go that route, but it didn't do it. And, Reigns and Ambrose, the stuff they did there where Reigns said, you know, the loser buys beers, it was corny as hell, but I liked it a lot. I thought it was fun. And Roman Reigns is fantastic.
That dive, man, that's pretty athletic for a guy his size.
Roman Reigns is a fantastic performer right now. And God forbid, you know, Rollins winning with a pedigree. And then Triple H coming out. Everything has to be about Triple H again. And, I just thought that finish was flat as hell. It really was.
I love that he's doing the fucking pedigree. That's just so dickish.
It is dickish, but it's actually a pretty shitty
pedigree.
It wasn't the best looking pedigree of all time.
And Randy Orton has taken so many fucking pedigrees and kicked out that he has the job to the shittiest one ever done, just about.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that they played it up right, because I cannot see Rollins teaming up with Ambrose or Reigns, because neither one of those guys has gotten their comeuppance on that guy yet. You know, before he can reunite with them, you know what I mean? If you got to have it where one of them is, especially if Reigns is going to be the de facto Hulk Hogan going forward. You got to have it where that guy gets over.
Well, if they'd done it like where like Triple H is showing more loyalty to Kane than he is to Seth, then you could be like Seth being like, fuck you. And getting ready. I know we've all been fighting together,
maybe.
You know, but yeah, that's the only thing I was thinking as far as a possible storyline.
I thought the one spot was cute, you know, that you were talking about, Donnie. Putting Orton through. And then obviously I was hoping he broke a rib when that table didn't
first time. Does he owe you money?
No, dude. He just owes me a lot of waste of time on my fucking TV screen. Get off my fucking screen.
The one thing I said about Kane.
Shit.
The one thing I said about Kane, and I hate seeing him in matches.
What? Like Chris, that, break up, dude. Everybody's break up. All right, Zellner, you're breaking up. Donnie was breaking up earlier. Dylan, are you going to break up on me? What are you going to tell me about this movie?
I hopefully don't. I thought it was a very entertaining match that got progressively better over the course of the match, which is good. I think the big takeaways from the match are that Roman Reigns is now, I think, pretty clearly the best in-ring performer in WWE. I don't even think it's all that close. He hits a home run. The match was better when he was in the match. I the segments where he wasn't involved were clearly the worst parts of the match. Like, not even close. He just adds a lot with his body language. He's gotten really good about timing his spots. You know, he's really, really good right now as a worker. Yep. I still think he's got, you know, some stink on him from the way he was treated in the, you know, last 6 months or so in terms of how he's been promoted and built, but they've slowly gotten better and better with that. I am going to take the other big takeaway before I make a controversial argument is that Randy Orton taking the fall really shocked me. I thought for sure that the entire reason they put Ambrose in the match was to take the fall. So I think it's actually a really good sign for Ambrose that he didn't take the fall, because it seemed so obvious to me that that's why they put him in the match, that Orton taking the fall to me is a really good sign for Ambrose, because you know, I would have bet, you know, seriously bet money that he was guaranteed to be the guy losing this. So I think that was a good sign. The match itself,
Do you think that's maybe the best he's looked in a while too, Ambrose? As in,
no,
like, as in at least being treated good.
Well, the Rollins match on Raw, I mean, which he won, and they did some stuff here which teased off that match. Like, I thought it was really cool. They did the near fall on the schoolboy, and normally a schoolboy is like, it's a throwaway spot, but because Ambrose had won a match recently on TV with the schoolboy, you almost for a split second thought, holy shit, are they going to have him win this? So, I mean, especially because it was after both the everybody else had been powerbombed through a table. So they did some really clever in that regard, you know, down the stretch of this match. I thought it was put together. Now, having said that, I'm going to make one controversial point, and that is
– make your point, but just make the point. Don't argue it. Just make the point, and we're going to let the other guys argue it, and then we'll get back to you, Dylan, because you're going in and out for a minute. I want to give you a break, okay?
Sure. I would just say, I think the match should have been Seth Rollins versus Kane. I think that should have been the main event of this pay-per-view.
Okay. Zellner, do you agree?
That's what they built up the whole time. Kane is the whole match was built around Kane. He's the one that got Reigns in the match. He's the one that got Ambrose in the match.
Okay. So, Pete, do you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Johnny, you agree with that?
Well, yeah, and the point that he's like playing the manager role. So yeah, sure. But he's the manager role.
Well, I'm just
he's not a manager.
He's the most protected authority figure.
I said manager role.
I mean, with the exception of Triple H, he's the most protected guy on the roster. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, he's presented much more strongly on TV than anybody else.
Okay. Manager role. Okay. He's a prop in a story, is what he is. He's not.
Yeah, and the story is all about him.
He's a prop that's being used.
A big prop.
A very big prop, but he's a prop.
They were basically fighting for his affection.
Oh, Christ. Okay. You know what? Here's the thing. Hold on. I'm just giving everybody out there in Place to Be Nation Land a warning. If Kane's going to main event one of these shows, we're not doing a show that month.
You see, a very young Glenn Jacobs once beat up Will and took his lunch money in 1974.
Yeah, not at all.
Now, Kane has I was breaking up while I was trying to say this, but Kane has become a really good promo. Very good promo.
I agree with that. But it's still ridiculous that he's got this spot when you consider that they've got all these guys who are talented guys who need to be promoted better, who could just as soon fill this role, who are just sort of there occupying space, you know. I mean, Kane, I think, has actually been the best he's been in years over the last few weeks. You know, maybe even the last month. But it makes that he should be promoted as strongly as he has.
Character-wise, what other old guy there
They don't need an old guy. There's no argument.
You know who would be great? You know who would be great in this role? Barrett.
You can have Barrett. You can have young. Harper. You don't need an old guy.
The point is that he's worked his way to this point in the company.
That's a aspect of this story that they have chosen to present, but it's not the necessary component. It's not the necessary component. I mean, I know you made him
director of operations.
Anybody who's over the age of 40 that's booked on WWE TV, but the reality
is
he's not that. The central component of the story is that he is a director of operations. He's the authority's muscle man, basically. That's what he is. You could have anybody do that. I mean, that's just a matter of presentation.
But it makes sense that it's an old guy who's been loyal.
Well, you can make sense of any of that stuff. You're the number one defender of the argument that you can make sense of.
Now, I would like to now have like the young guy, like you say, the young guy take over that position, as in like in any corporation where some young asshole takes over from the guy who's been working there for 40 years. So that's why I like the corporate Kane character.
Will he get a watch when he retires?
Hopefully.
Oh, man. I mean,
they give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and some young motherfucker takes his job. That's hard times, baby.
A computer took your job, Daddy. Honestly, Kane has been good in this role, particularly over the last month. That's not the issue. The issue is there's all these guys who are doing little to nothing on the roster that could easily be put in a role either exactly like that or similar to it. And but having said that, it's ridiculous that Kane was not in the main event of this, because the build to this was all about Kane and Rollins. That was the focal point of TV for a month.
I thought that when Sheamus turned heel, that was going to be his role.
I mean, I'm just astounded that they didn't do it, because you know, there's no reason not to do it when you build the TV that way. It made no sense. The match delivered in a way, but now it's like I have a feeling they're going to keep doing the Kane and Seth Rollins stuff, because I don't understand why they just spent a month doing what they did if they're not eventually going to have a match.
And then, you know, on this show, all Kane did was help Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
They built one thing up, and they built Discord up and didn't pay off on it.
It's just really weird.
Went over the
top. Just really weird the way they did it. I mean, whether you think Kane is good or bad in the role, whether you think he belongs in the role, to me that's almost secondary to why you would spend a month building to a match that you don't deliver. And then on top of not delivering it, not only did Kane side with Rollins, it's not so much that he sided with him, it's that he sided with him like 2 minutes into the match. Like, they didn't even build to it. It was like they immediately threw it out right as soon as the match started. So,
well, kayfabe-wise, he made his decision to keep getting a big paycheck. And from our perspective, everyone's like, I don't want Kane all that involved in this. They made it clear that, you know, the whole Kane decision thing is not that important. It was important on TV. It was important on TV. Apparently, they made a choice that it's not going to be important for this.
But there was no tease of conflict in this match. He just immediately started up in Rollins.
And even, there wasn't even a tease.
Yeah, it was. It was really weird. I mean,
the announcers said, "Oh, what's King going to do?" Oh, there's what he did.
And yeah, nobody cares about to those them. Knuckleheads anymore. They've lost all credibility.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I couldn't possibly listen to the people trying to tell the story as badly as
they don't try to tell the story.
But when they do, no one listens. So, and that's another issue.
It was just odd. I don't get what the point of any of the Kane stuff. It makes even less sense now than it did beforehand. Beforehand, it made no sense from the perspective of why the fuck is another guy who's a young guy being given the title coming out of WrestleMania with fucking Kane in a feud again. Now it makes no sense because they didn't deliver what they built on. It's like they don't. I honestly think Rollins will wrestle him at the next pay per view. To be honest.
It makes sense because the chamber is a draw. I mean, that's the main thing they're building is the chamber matches. They can throw a match like Rollins and Kane on.
Although what they need to do is just get it over with and put the Shield versus the fucking Authority in the chamber. Not saying that it's the Shield, but just Ambrose, Rollins, Reigns, Mercury, Numbnuts, and Kane, and that's it. And just fucking.
Are you calling Jamie Noble Numbnuts?
I fucking forgot his name.
He's like the best thing on this.
But it's one thing that was fairly obvious, though, is the authority does need more on somebody else on their side. Because, I mean, Seth is really the only active wrestler on the side. Kane is Kane. He's in his role. And you got Noble and Mercury as the security. They need somebody to be.
Is Big Show hurt?
A bunch of guys wearing ties in the ring with them.
Well, don't worry about it, guys, because they have the God, they have Jesus, Triple H, ready to swoop in from and save all. So
no. Is Show hurt or something? Because
no, but it's good he's not on TV. But yeah, I don't know if he's.
Is he selling the Last Man Standing? Is that what's going on?
It could be. I mean, he was in desperate need of time off. He was overexposed. I mean, he worked his ass off and had a great match last month. Don't get me wrong, but he's as overexposed as anybody on the roster.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying, man, get it over with already. I'm just tired. Man, we saw with the reaction from the crowd tonight that you could probably put Rollins, Ambrose, and Reigns in any type of series for a while because they never really did that whole series. Like, that's another thing we got robbed of last year with Reigns' injury. We never really got the Shield payoff. Yeah. Well, I mean, no, we got Ambrose versus Rollins, but
oh yeah, you got scraps,
really
got
poorly
scraps,
booked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with the three of them, I think they'd have a fun dynamic. I don't know.
There was a special buzz in that match when the three of them did together. You know, so I mean, there's money and juice on that angle.
The key thing, though, is, and this is the classic case of the problem they have right now, is they are so loaded on the babyface side of things, they have no heels of credibility. Basically, other than Rollins, now that Rusev has then jobbed three straight shows to Cena, they have no heels of credibility.
Well, they also have no heels who can afford to lose. So, you know, they have to put the heels over the babyfaces for the time being, or just have a bunch of weak ass heels, then it doesn't matter if you beat them. I mean, it's really lopsided right now. And don't get me wrong, they've got a ton of talent, and they've done pretty good in terms of presenting certain guys. Like, I think Neville's been presented pretty good, for example. It's not like it's a complete – Sheamus has been presented pretty good. But so it's not like it's a complete disaster, but they've got this situation. I keep coming back to this, but this is the central problem with the company. They've got all these guys who are talented, who are good, who are over to a degree, but it's very difficult to make anybody a star because no one can afford to lose. So, like, they've got, because of the fact that the way they've got this set up, they really don't have a ton of guys who, I mean, you can't build anybody because your entire mid-card is filled with guys who have potential who can't really afford to lose because they've been jobbed out for so long.
They don't have the better, like the 35 to 45-year-old guys who have that experience that can afford to
lose. They've missed their opportunity. Right? That's the thing.
Because they got rid of all of them.
Let them all go.
So what you're basically saying is there's no more jobbers. Let me finish. What we're thinking about is there's no more. Everyone's got to fight each other, and they're all stars. There's no more.
They're not stars.
But no, everyone in WWE is a superstar.
They're all garbage. Fine,
whatever. But what I'm talking about, there's no more fucking Rusty Brookses and everything.
There's no more Iron Sheiks or Nikolai Volkov circa 86, 87, who they have credibility. And you could throw them in there to lose to some up and
coming. Okay, well, fine. Or Tony Garea, circa 84.
I'd even go later. There are no Chris Benoit's in that company.
Thank God.
You know what I'm saying? But there are no Eddie Guerrero's or Chris Benoit's or Regals or guys like that either.
And families everywhere go, thank you.
Yeah, no, you know what I'm talking about.
But you look, a guy like a Kurt Angle. If this stage of his career, if he had been straight and still in the company, he could have been there to put over these guys.
That would be Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels.
Or Edge.
Randy Orton.
Guys, Kane. Kane should be – that's the value of Kane is not as a guy who is the focal point of television for a month and the most well-protected star in the company with the exception of Triple H, who never wrestles. The role of a guy like Kane, and Triple H for that matter, should be getting guys over by dropping falls to them. I mean, Kane may have a role, but his role should be to lose matches clean and to get out of the way and not take up five television segments a show. That's a, you know, that might be a per, that'd be a perfectly suitable use of Kane. I'm not a fan of the guy, but if you're gonna use him, that's how he should be used.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's where we're gonna stop this segment.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly, but okay. that should have been 4 years ago.
Yeah, agreed. We should have been talking about this 4 years ago. We probably were. Pete, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
Man, I'm going to go thumbs in the middle. I liked a lot of the wrestling.
Wait, hold on. You gave last month's show a thumbs up, but this one a thumbs in the middle?
Yep. I liked a lot of the wrestling on the show. The booking and I like the Kane payoff stuff really bothered me. The Rusev, the booking on Cena and that really bothered me a lot. I didn't really care for the I thought the match didn't pay off for me. So there was a lot of things that came out that looked like
okay.
Sour mouth, and I didn't like. I thought the show peaked early and then went downhill, and voting for that main event, and I still don't think that was a great match. I thought it had a lot of great moments.
Okay,
that resonated. So it's a thumbs in the middle for me.
Shocker, Zellner.
I'll go thumbs up. There was way too much good wrestling on this show not to give it a thumbs up.
There was
one bad match. There was one match that was okay, but everything else, including Cena and Rusev, was good to great.
I'm with you, Zellner. I think you summed up my thoughts. I thought this show was like, especially that first hour and a half or so, man, just boom, 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 knocking me over the head with great wrestling. Dylan, where are you at with this?
I think it's thumbs up. I mean, it's not like a blow away match of the or show of the year type of show or anything like that, which. It's too bad because it actually was arguably on pace to be, and maybe with some slight changes in booking and a better match with Neville Barrett, you could have got to that level.
Oh, I agree.
But it was, I think, a thumbs up. I mean, I agree. There was too much good wrestling on the show, and even the booking decisions that I thought were bad, they were not as disastrously bad as some of the other things. And
worse than anything, they were predictable, right?
And the main event did do one thing that I thought was a pleasant surprise in protecting Ambrose. That actually, to me, was a booking plus.
And Reigns.
Yeah, that was a booking plus to me. So, it's like a small thing for a guy not to drop a fall to be like a, but given how the WWE usually operates, for him not to have dropped the fall, actually, I thought that was a pretty telling and cool moment. So to me, in that regard, I don't even think the booking was as universally bad as maybe it might have appeared in some of the big matches.
Right. Okay. Johnny?
I thought the show was a lot better than the last month's show. And you're going to make the joke like, oh, the levels of what you like. But this was really good. Like last month's was good. This was really good. This was a really good wrestling show.
Yeah, I think that compared to last month's Ziggler, Sheamus, and the tag match, comparable, if not better. Plus, this had the Ryback Rusev match. This had I liked Cena Rusev this month a lot more. And I liked the main event a lot more than that. Who was it last month? Rollins and Orton?
Yeah.
In a singles match? Yeah. I thought this main event blew away that horrible.
Oh, totally. Shit, so. Totally. Totally.
So, to me, easy thumbs up show. Booking, like I said, the worst thing was in those two big matches, it was predictable, right? We knew Rollins was walking out the belt. We knew Cena was going to win. That's the worst part about the booking. That's why I don't even invest my time in the shows anymore. I just wait.
See, I actually had doubts during the main event. They sold me. I actually started going.
I have no idea how you could have had any doubts whatsoever.
I was suckered in. They suckered me in.
You're just a sucker.
The show.
All right.
Oh, gee, I enjoy wrestling and let it suck me in. Boy, what a goof I am.
Well, you know what?
But it's not about being a goof. It's just that the fact that they suckered you in when it was so fucking predictable. Give me a fucking break.
Well, I've been watching wrestling forever. The whole point is getting suckered.
I'm gonna defend Johnny on this one and say that there was actually a couple of near falls during the Reigns Ambrose segment that I'm not 100% bit on. It was more like, oh my God, might this be the finish rather than holy shit.
Exactly, dude. I honestly thought, man, are they going to give Ambrose the Mankind fucking run?
Yeah, I mean, there was one or two that I bit on.
Dylan, I'm ashamed of you because you are the most cynical bastard on earth.
Why are you ashamed?
Hold on, shut up. Last year, Dylan was the one who was like, I didn't fucking buy one near fall when it was like, who was it? Orton's, Reigns, Kane, and Cena, right?
Yep.
Dylan, I didn't buy any of that shit. I think even I bought like one or two of them, and Dylan was like, I didn't buy any of them. You know, didn't buy any of the Undertaker things, Undertaker near falls in the Triple H matches, the Mania, you know. I mean, I've been doing shows with Dylan for a long time, so for him to actually defend Johnny, I think that's a... you know what? It's kind of special in its own creepy way.
It's fucking glasnost, dude. It's my Rusev tribute.
It's glasnost. It's daytime. Anyway. All right. Guys, want to thank y'all. Who's doing NXT with me on Wednesday? Anybody?
I can do it.
I'm down.
Dylan? If I get home in time, I definitely want to.
Okay. Well,
should be the same.
Well, guys, we're going to... you know, we'll talk more this week about your individual shows, but I want to get off the air before my whole fucking computer system blows up. So for all these guys, I want to thank y'all for listening to the Reaction Show, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday night after the NXT show on the WWE Network. You're listening to The Place to Be Nation. Bye-bye.